Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Chatting Up Melba, Conversation Sparked by Art. It's going to be an amazing evening, and I'll quickly introduce myself and co-curator. I'm Diana Gold, and I'm standing next to Campbell Wallace, and we are delighted to have you all here tonight. Before commencing proceedings, I would like to take this opportunity to acknowledge the traditional owners of land on which we stand, the peoples of the Kulin Nation and their elders, both past and present. We are very, very honoured to have many distinguished people who have supported us this evening, and I take this opportunity to welcome them and the artists. Thank you, and I'm going to pass you over to Carmel now.
Good evening. It's my great pleasure to be the person who introduces our host and poet of ceremony, Nathan Curnow. Nathan is a writer, performer, and past editor of iconic Melbourne literary journal Going Down Swinging. He's the author of three books of poetry, including the Ghost Poetry Project, a collection based on his stays in 10 haunted sites around the country. His work features widely in Australia and overseas and was commissioned for the Melbourne Poetry Map, an audio collection supported by the City of Melbourne as a way to navigate the CBD through poetry. He's a recipient of numerous awards, including the Josephine Ulrich Poetry Prize and also three grants from the Literature Board of the Australia Council. So it's my great pleasure to introduce you to Nathan Curnow.
Thank you, Carmel. I'll pass this over to our guest conversationalists. Ladies and gentlemen, it's lovely to be with you tonight and to be here in discussion with three people who have just a unique relationship with Melbourne and experience of Melbourne. They come from a diversity of backgrounds, so I'm very excited about the conversation that will happen tonight through the wonderful art behind us. We have a variety of art and styles here tonight. We have lithographs in the exhibition. We have stencil art. We have digital prints. And it's wonderful that my guests here tonight come at it from just as a diverse background as that. So welcome tonight. I want to just mention something Robert Heather said in the opening launch of this exhibition. He said that it's as if something is wanting to come off the walls here and be amongst us. Some part of Melbourne is wanting to actually join us. And in a sense tonight, that's exactly what we have. I don't know if you've noticed, but we have the wonderful Greta Mortensen over here. She's dressed as Lola Montez, ladies and gentlemen. Isn't she beautiful? Lola Montez, of course, was scandalous, was world famous, and famous here in Melbourne and on the goldfields for her racy spider dance, her erotic dance. You don't have a whip on you by any chance, do you? Thank goodness. Lola Montez was famous for whipping a newspaper editor in Ballarat when he gave her a bad review. So I'm feeling safe. Ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce our guest speakers tonight. It's my pleasure to have Neil Stonnell here with us. Neil joined Grimshaw Architects in 1997 and moved out from the UK to Australia in 2002. To head up the practice's first Australian project, becoming partner of the firm in 2007. His work includes the Paddington Station redevelopment in London, the Rolls-Royce headquarters and manufacturing plant in Goodwood, the Seafarers Bridge, and the Doherty Institute in Melbourne. Plus, on top of that, he jointly led the delivery of the Southern Cross Station, which was awarded numerous awards for its design. Neil has significant experience in a number of building typologies with particular focus on transport and infrastructure, and he's responsible for continuing to develop the Australian and regional business. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Neil Stonnell.
Thank you very much. Well, it's great to be invited into this forum to talk about art. Normally I'm talking about much harder subject matter, and listening to my bio, a lot of infrastructure-focused projects as well. So where's the connection between myself and this forum, I guess? Well, I'm an architect. I'm not an artist. I was thinking earlier that one of the reasons I'm not an artist is I got grade C at A-level art when I was at school. So I moved to the science of architecture, which so far served me quite well. So one of the connections between this forum and myself is through the work of Marco Lucio. And when we were developing Southern Cross Station, Marco came onto the site and did some fantastic dry points. A whole lengthy series, dozens of dry points of the development and of the creation of Southern Cross Station. And he then moved on to Seafarers Bridge, which was our next immediate project just in front of the convention centre, did some great ones of those. I had to buy another one from him. And then he stopped doing our work. So I had to start buying stuff that was from other locations and moved on to his New York collection. But that was really the route into this. And really, when I was asked to be involved in this, I hadn't appreciated quite how architectural, I guess, many of the pieces actually prove to be. I mean, what we try and do as architects is create space, create new places within the city, but quite often when you create a new building, a new object, it doesn't always sing on day one. You think of yourself as a good architect, it really should do, and it should sing at day one, but buildings create their own place, their own time, their own way they work, and it's really through a layering of politics, economics, geography, usage, all of these things sort of layer on top of each other to make the building a success or the place a success. And that's really what I kind of get from these images. There are a number of architectural ones. There's the Kat Polsky's layering over here of a number of different buildings on top of each other, which is really how cities develop and how they create themselves. And you're seeing many, many different types of buildings, histories of buildings at the same time. I've forgotten his surname. Pitaro, sorry, I'm going to get this wrong all the way through. Is another layering, but it's a horizontal layering. So it's actually showing, you know, the tunnel going into the bowels of the city, so you can see what's above. But there's a grit and a kind of an earthiness to the undercroft of the city. And then you've got the Collins Street Towers. So there's another kind of verticality looking down. So it's a horizontal layering of the city, which is fantastic. And then Marco and Deborah's work. I mean, Marco actually chose not to do architecture in this one, which was quite intriguing, and has actually focused on the people that make the city. So that, you know, the personal layer, the human layer of the city. And he chose Swanston Street, which has all kinds of layering down that street. And then Deborah's work as well is choosing the kind of four. You didn't put Southern Cross in there, Deborah, but they've got another wonderful station. But four really iconic focus points of the city, and again, it's a layering of the movement of the human body over the top of these wonderful buildings. So that's really what I got from this collection of art, without going through all of them. Having said all of that, and really, because of, I guess, my background and my focus, kind of I was drawn to the architectural ones. That's what I sort of wanted to see the depth in. If I had to choose a favourite, and I'm not sure we're supposed to choose a favourite here.
You can if you want.
It was nothing remotely architectural, so I actually quite like the dog.
The submission magician, apparently.
Otherwise known as the name, the dog. But it spoke to me in a very direct way, because we bought a dog not that long ago. When I moved to Australia, I told my wife we'll be able to get a dog. Well, 12 and a half years later, we finally got a dog, and it looks not unlike that one.
Here, Neil, I have all these questions about architecture and all these leads I can go into architecture. I should have just thought about dogs, shouldn't I? I should have come up with some dog questions.
It took me a while to get into dogs, I'll be honest, 12 and a half years, but I'm now there. So,
I'm interested in you saying that it takes a while for a building to sing. In the 1930s, the Melbourne skyline was referred to as a scrap heap. It was referred to as a ragged skyline. And of course, you know, the buildings, there's a rise and fall. These come and go, and they take hold in the public's imagination or they don't. And I guess in that sense, the Docklands is really a wait and see as to how it captures our imagination, whether we whether it kind of remains an adjunct or a kind of a side to the Melbourne CBD. And it almost seems like there are arbitrary things or events that make that occur, whether that takes hold or not, doesn't it?
I think good cities are developed, they live through accidents.
Yeah.
It's the accidental space, it's not the planned. I think, you know, Melbourne's no different from many cities, actually. There's a lot of very, very considered planned spaces through the city. And you can argue whether they all work. I mean, yeah. Fed Square, love it or hate it, I think it works despite itself in many yeah. ways, because Melbourne desperately needed that sort of space. I think Docklands, when you talk about Docklands, there was a master plan for it, and it was rolled out in one hit. So it was parceled up to developers to come and take possession of a site, purchase a site, deliver a building on it without any aspect of true urbanism to it. They were only concerned about their immediate site.
Yep.
And I think the Docklands has failed because of that. It's improving itself. You're getting yeah. more life down there, and the buildings are starting to add, again, layers of development, layers of complexity to it, but it takes time. It's the same Docklands in London. It was right. a dreadful place for many, many years, and has now been there 20, 30 years. So it's a very different, vibrant place. And I think Docklands over time will become that place. I mean, we've had our own ideas for how to re-energize Docklands, and some of them maybe are a bit perverse, but I mean, we actually suggested, it's not a promotion for what our thoughts, but why? Because of the sparsity. I mean, one of the problems with Docklands, if we're talking about that as a space, is everybody thinks water's great. If you're on a water's edge, it's a wonderful opportunity. Well, I honestly don't think that's the case with Docklands, because that's where it's exposed. You sit behind plastic at Newquay, and that's not a great environment. And the cafes probably exist because they've got people living above them, but.
I might just pick up on that, actually, because Melbourne wasn't designed particularly with the Yarra River in mind, with the water and the flow of the Yarra River in mind. And I might bring you in, Robin, but first let me introduce you before I do that. Robin Anear, ladies and gentlemen, is author of 5 books of history, including A City Lost and Found and Whelan the Wreckers, A City Lost and Found, Whelan the Wreckers Melbourne, and of course the much-loved Bare Brass, Imagining Early Melbourne, which won numerous awards. She's a past member of the Library Board of the State Library Board of Victoria, and was one of the library's first inaugural creative fellows. Louis Menand has written that what readers of history seek is a sense of what time was like when they were not there to experience it. And Robin does that like no other. Please welcome Robin Anear. Now, Robin, I know I've asked you also to just start off with 5 minutes of thoughts, but I can't help but leave that there. The Melbourne city grid was very much almost a standard city grid, wasn't it, used by Empire and for establishing cities. So it wasn't with the Yarra River in mind.
No, I think the city was designed turning its back on the Yarra, and it's interesting hearing Neil talk about his expectation that given time, Docklands should work, because I think the whole South Bank development and the idea of addressing the river more seemed pretty weird when it was first happening in the 80s. Certainly it's taken me a while to take on the Yarra as part of Melbourne. It was never meant to be that way, and it was that grid, I think, was part of controlling and shaping a populace in yes. the times of empire, those 1830s.
Yes. Now I want to hear what you have to say, but I keep Melbourne, in fact, was designed without a town square, and that was a very reasoned thing, wasn't it? I mean, they didn't want undesirables congregating in Melbourne, did they?
This is the thinking in retrospect. Whether it's, I mean, it's a point that is argued, but certainly in the 1830s and into the 1840s, there was a lot of disputation abroad in Britain. The Chartists and other organisations were rising up, and you know, it helped if you had a mustering point, a rallying point, like a town square or a market square.
Right.
And the thinking is that in drawing that grid, the town square was very deliberately left off for
right.
that reason. It wouldn't give a natural gathering point for discontents, for malcontents. But malcontents will find their gathering point.
For democracy. Democracy wasn't looked upon particularly, uprisings of democracy.
No, democracy was the D word, I guess, in those times. It changed complexion as the 19th century went on somewhat. But it was certainly, the D word back when Melbourne was planned. And, it wasn't to be given places where it could burst out too readily. I think places like the Eastern Market, though, just spitting distance from here, took on that role, though. And, of course, it was also spitting distance from Parliament House, which was a great thing because you could really bore it up the parliamentarians, within their hearing. That was seen as an advantage. So, these things will find their spilling point.
Before I ask you anything more, please share with us what struck you about the exhibition? What really took hold in you and your experience of Melbourne?
Well, just what I would have hoped for and expected, that is different ways of seeing, 12 different ways of seeing. And if we had 13 artists, there'd be 13 different ways of seeing. I think you have actually said, if I may quote you, if I can find it on my bit of paper, in your fabulous poem, from the State Library lawns. That's another place where people have made their own, another rallying place. You've said, just by watching, we create the city. And the act of looking, and in this case, putting it in a frame, has created the city in 12 different ways for the purposes of this exhibition. But it's what I love in writing history and thinking about history is that everybody who comes to it really does make their own city, even from the supposed hard facts and dry facts of history and things that have been done and dusted. And I see that in this exhibition. You see some remarkably different ways of conceptualising the city. Right behind us, the idea of friends capturing, friends and friendships capturing somebody's idea of what the city means to them. You know, that would never have, in putting the brief of...
Yes.
Create something based on your experience of Melbourne. I mean, that is because I'm an enigmatic loner, probably, that I would not think of the idea of friends capturing my idea of Melbourne. But there you go. I find it so exciting to see these. Of course... I shouldn't say of course, but Kat Polsky's work over here, which Neil has already referred to, says such a lot about the ways of seeing Melbourne that are natural to me, particularly through my work looking at the layers of Will and the Wreckers Melbourne, the layers of Melbourne that they wrecked during their 100 years career. In some cases, they wrecked three generations of building on the same site over their 100 years. And in researching and writing and imagining the story of Melbourne as they saw it and created it, those layers of buildings that inhabited the same site... fixed themselves in my way of seeing Melbourne. So I'll walk down Bourke Street from Spencer Street Station and at some of those key intersections, and I think of Queen Street and Bourke Street, where in 1960, Whelan's heyday, and also incidentally the year in which I was born, which explains my fascination with demolition, they were wrecking the buildings on the four corners at the same time.
Wow.
And I look at that and I picture that sort of layering, that overwriting, that sort of palimpsest of the city of Melbourne. So I do love that. And in Angela's and Marco's work, I see, those favourite streets, those things that endear themselves to people in Melbourne. And, in the case of Marco in particular, I find Swanston Street a surprising choice and a bold choice because, it's the goings on there are of questionable sort of attractiveness, I would think. But he, you know, it keeps him amused, obviously, what are the things that he sees there. And I'm fascinated to read what he's written about it, that it's what he sees as a real key to Melbourne for him. So again, it just says such a lot about what people see in Melbourne and what draws them to it. What else have I thought here? I have thought, oh, look, I know what I thought. Roan's fabulous work on the wall.
Collins Street, yeah.
The Collins Street building. That stands out to me as, well, a landmark, and a favourite here because it's gone, because it's been demolished, is part of it. That's something that I always love. I love endangered species. But I also love the maturity of vision that it reflects, not just on Rome, but on Melbourne, that here was a thing that was created to be temporary and people loved it and they recorded it and then they said, okay, we accept, it's going. And that's a maturity that I'd like to see more of, being able to love something but also part with it. But I also want to know, did he see it demolished and was it recorded?
Is it demolished or is it it's being built, something's
over?
Being built
on
over
top, on top
it.
Of it. I know, yeah. But the top of the wall is all ragged and so there's a degree of demolition has gone on there. I keep peering over the hoarding and it feels as though there's some demolition gone
right.
on there. So he's got to have seen it kind of disappear, hasn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah.
Yeah. What does that feel like, I wonder?
I wonder.
Yeah.
I have so many questions, actually, just from listening to you two already. But I might introduce our last speaker for now, and then I'll throw it open to the three of us. Terence Murphy, ladies and gentlemen, is guest relations manager here, of course, at the Sofitel Melbourne. Thank you. He was a finalist in the National Accommodation Industry Awards for Excellence in 2011. He's known for his attentive service and his famous three kisses on the cheek. I haven't received one yet, but I'm hoping to. He's become
Don't worry.
He's become something of a Melbourne identity himself, and working in this role here at the Sofitel and living in the CBD has a unique insight into Melbourne and Melbourne life. Another round of applause for Terence Murphy.
I'd like to say a couple of things. One, if Lola does need a whip, we do have them here because we're a five-star hotel and we cater for every need.
Have some been left behind, Terence?
And some that belong to me. Now, that's the untidy bit, and we'll get to the tidy bit now. When I was asked to sit up here and talk, I jumped at that because, as most of my coterie of admirers over here and supporters over here will say that as an Irishman I can talk for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. I have 5 minutes. I was absolutely honoured to be asked to do this because Melbourne, and I live almost next door, and Melbourne is an extraordinary city with beautiful buildings, ugly buildings, beautiful parks, beautiful gardens, but an extraordinary vibrancy. I live a 4 minute walk from here. I can walk down Flinders Lane. There are 30 bars, restaurants, galleries, laneways, grotty laneways, pretty laneways, fascinating people. And it's the fabric of our society that we can do that in Melbourne. And looking at these works of art here, and yes, you're right, they represent Melbourne. They are 13 or 12 ways of looking at Melbourne. We'll point out the Badagini Run print over there, because that's another way of looking at Melbourne, but through a glass darkly. I think I knew somebody would get that literary illusion if I tried hard enough. I think we are the layering concept, and I really found that quite interesting, because we have this amazing building in which I work, and this building is now 30 years old, I think. Yet I live in what is known as Warrender House in Flinders Street. I live next to the Duke of Wellington. That is the pub, not His Grace's town residence. I live next to the Duke of Wellington in what's called Warrender House. It's been there since 1896, I think. In its original state, it was a mortuary. So I live in a mortuary. And it gets cold in the bedroom at night time sometimes, and I think, why is that curtain moving and the window is closed? But I think that's the joy of Melbourne. And you know, yeah, Whelan did some quite frightful things, quite frankly. But I think that through that, and through your comment, Robin, about temporary architecture, temporary structures, that's clever, that's smart. We get the benefit of somebody's creativity and intelligence, and we enjoy that, and it's like a flower, though. A flower is creative, a flower is beautiful, but it dies. And that's I think, once we grasp that, we grasp the meaning of our lives and our city and our people. And I look at this exhibition and I think and I wish and I hope that it will just be one of the great, great art moments in our country and in the world. I think Brazil is a challenge. During Mardi Gras, you get your costumes out, girls. But I think that we can always challenge our city, change our city, and through the art, through the movement of art, and art in all its forms, because very briefly, this hotel sponsors 20 arts organisations, ranging from the Australian Opera through to Victorian Opera, McClellan Sculpture Garden, events such as this, which we are absolutely delighted to be able to be involved with. And we even do a burlesque show. And that's Melbourne. That is, you've got 12 views of Melbourne there. So we've got 20 views of Melbourne in our hotel, and there's something for everybody. And that's the other great strength of our city, that we have something for everybody. Have I said enough? Is that 4.5 minutes?
You're giving me wonderful material here to work with, Terence. I want a chance to use it. There's been a number of things said already about layering, and Robin, you brought up the palimpsest of Kat's work. And we've mentioned Swanston Street Walk, the collaboration of all these people on Swanston Street, and how we kind of make up Melbourne as we go along each day. We, you know, the winners and the losers, the ugly and the beautiful, and it's some kind of work in progress. A flower, Terence, as suggested, perhaps. So, look, that interests me a great deal. The conversation between buildings, the conversations between people, different perspectives of looking at Melbourne. If I can go back to you, Neil, I was listening to Will Bruder, the Phoenix, the architect from Phoenix, Arizona, talking about architecture, and he was saying that it's about the spaces between that make the city and are equally important to the physical, that architects have this skill of spatial awareness, of being able to see the spaces and how they relate to the buildings. And I think we're talking about that, particularly in terms of Kat's work here, but also in terms of Angela's work here, we have, you know, Melbourne being a city of literature, we have a mix of street signs from Lygon Street. And she's collected them all, she's put them all into the one place. The spaces between and what they mean. Can I just throw that to you, Neil?
Yeah, I think when you're designing, I think quite often you get focused on the object you're designing. And I think the success or failure of that is about the edge. I think it's the edge condition of buildings that make it a success or a failure. And it is those spaces, it's those accidental spaces between buildings. I mean, being a non-Melburnian in birth, but I've been here for over 12 years now, 13 years, Melbourne has wonderful hidden spaces. I mean, the laneways, I mean, it is world famous for its laneways. And that they cover all type of experience. I mean, some that you'd wander down, you know you're going to a little bar, you're not sure whether you're going to get beaten up on the way or just covered in refuse, but they're wonderful spaces. And, yep. And this city, more than many others, really, really energises the forgotten space.
Yep.
And that's what makes this city really sing. I mean, I've had opportunities to move on from Melbourne, but I've got my fingernails into it now and love this city for what it is. It is... It is that architectural edge, or I said earlier, the accidental space that I think makes. And when you're thinking about public space as well, which is when a city really succeeds or fails, I think that it's the best spaces. If I was to think of some of my favourite spaces within the city, they're the compressed spaces. They're
right.
They're not the big kind of well-structured public gardens. They're the small. Contained spaces that provide a particular emotion, I think.
Robin, you said to me in an email before we came tonight, you said that you are actually more interested in the spaces, in those absences of the city or the gaps between, than you are in the actualities. And I guess how people use those and what you can imagine of them. We've had a number of colourful characters over the years in Melbourne using those spaces or using those gaps. Can I just ask you, who stands out to you as a favourite, perhaps colourful character? Is it Lola Montez? is it Lizzie Murphy, the publican who watered down her ale with Yarra water?
No, I'd have to say it wasn't Lizzie. Look, a favourite character of mine from Melbourne who was actually quite good at using the in-between spaces, I think it was a way of claiming them as his real estate, really, was E.W. Cole of the Book Arcade. His Book Arcade grew from a trolley at the Eastern Market in the 1860s to the biggest bookshop. I think he boasted the biggest bookshop in the world. Was it? We'll never know. But it was in Bourke Street, and it, in time, ran all the way through to Collins Street. So it ran through two blocks where David Jones is on the southern side of the Bourke Street Mall. Coles were there. Coles, the department store, no relation to EW. And he had that. Now, the Howie Place, which is an arcade, which has a... glassed-in ceiling over it. That was just a laneway, which he, you know, kind of claimed and roofed it in and made it part of his grand show. So he had everything, you know. He had virtually a freak show, or he had a menagerie there. He had, you know, ice creams. He had
the submission magician, perhaps.
Brass bands and teas and you name it. But you could go there. He had lots of seats in his bookshop, and you could go there and it had three stories, and you could spend all day reading books for free. And there were signs up saying, no obligation to buy. Can you believe that? He was just a larger-than-life character, and his use of space and his... encroachment on space and the identity that he gave to himself as a Melbourne institution through his encroachment on space, I really appreciate. And, you know, he still lives for me,
right,
through that. But the laneways too, I can't think of anybody who I can attach to a laneway, except possibly the artist, I think he was an etcher, John Sherlow, or perhaps he was just a sketcher. He was like me once. Well, he was called a trustee. I wish I'd been called a trustee. I was just a member of the library board. But in the old days, they were called trustees, which sounds far more responsible. And he, in the 1920s or 30s, was a trustee of the public library, now the state library. And he did some fantastic... Would they have been etchings or sketches or... etchings of laneways in Melbourne, and any of us can get the sense of a Sherlow etching. You go into a laneway and you kind of look up and into the distance, and this narrow aperture and what it shows you of the city, just little slivers of spires and of bits of buildings and so on. This was Sherlow at his best. And there are quite a few in the State Library which you can spot online, and they're just fabulous. And to me, there's still a lot of John Sherlow about the city, and in those in-between spaces, he captured them beautifully, and, you know, they live on.
Sure. You mentioned E.W. Cole, and we're very lucky to be a UN city of literature. Books and language and writing has always been with us here in Melbourne in a really special way. And I think Angela captures that, and also architecture, which features in Angela's work so much, language and architecture. In terms of signs, and
her use of signs, capturing signs here. The very first recorded sign in Melbourne was actually a sentence, I believe, which I think is very appropriate for a city of literature. It read, "This is Greater Bourke Street East," which is an entire sentence as a sign. But yes, and of course, Wheel and the Wrecker's sign became incredibly famous.
Iconic, yes. His two signs, really. Wheel and the Wrecker is here and Wheel and the Wrecker was here. And then there was the third variation on it, invented by Barry Humphreys, which said Wheel and the Wrecker should be here. And he was pictured in the Herald, I think, in the 1980s, holding that sign in front of various Melbourne buildings, mainly the Gas and Fuel building in Flinders Street, but also others which he felt Whelan could do a favour to.
And the wonderful irony is that of all the things he wrecked and all the magnificent buildings, it was actually his sign which became heritage listed in the end, wasn't it?
That's right. There's a sign that used to hang above Whelan's yard in Sydney Road, Brunswick. It doesn't say Whelan the Wrecker is here. It just said Wheel and the Wrecker, and it still hangs there. It's a horrible orange faded illuminated sign from the 1970s. The building has now been repurposed and there's all sorts of stuff built on top of, behind and around it. But Heritage Victoria has classified that sign and it cannot be, you know, moved, taken down, whatever. And I just, the irony of that, you know, it runs so deep. It's just beautiful.
Terence, in your opening remarks there, I really enjoyed hearing about Melbourne as a flower and how it is continually blooming and dying and recreating itself and functioning in that way. And one of the works of this exhibition that really strikes out for me is Carmel Wallace's digital print here with the plane leaves. Here we are over here, the plane leaves and the bill posters. It speaks of the environment continually renewing itself, but also of Melbourne cultural life and the shows that come and go, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And there are... I will name my three favourites, if that's all right.
Sure.
Carmel Wallace, Heather Shimmin and Judy Holding. I think those three are particularly Melbourne. And it is a growth, and it's a regrowth, and it's a regeneration. Looking at Carmel's, I think... Because I live in a tiny apartment, my apartment is about, but it's not even as long as this. So my backyard is the Royal Botanical Gardens. My side yard is the Treasury Garden, and my picnic ground is the Fitzroy Gardens. So it's the colour and it's the life and death, in a way, in Carmel's that and you're right, embodies Melbourne. There's that life and death continually. Sorry.
Yeah. I don't want to stop you, but I think also there, another picture that particularly strikes me in terms of its past, present, and future, and capturing all of that is Bindi Cole's work, Murrum Alive.
Absolutely, and don't you think? Well, I think that I look at that and I see these two people, young and old, gazing into the distance, into that eye, which almost embodies the eye that. The wards off evil. Where's my Greek family gone? There they are over there. So they wear an eye that wards off evil, and I'm looking at that eye, and is that something that they're seeing as a positive side, or are they seeing that as destruction?
It's wonderfully put right in the middle of the frame there of the image. And the observation wheel being such a symbol of dysfunction of recent years.
Absolutely.
It's quite interesting, isn't it?
That's what I think. Are they looking at the future with any great hope, or are they sitting there or standing there thinking, oh, my God, here we go again. Who designed this? Who's responsible for this? But that also is a growth thing. And go back to what Neil was saying about Docklands. You know, we can excoriate Docklands as much as we like, and in fact, we do. But in 10 years' time,
yes,
it may well be the focal point of our city.
Yep.
And we have to admire them for having the forethought, the dreams, and to overcome the adversity that we think because personally I don't go there. I live next to the Duke of Wellington, you know, I'm not going anywhere else. So you've got to look at that as hopeful, I think.
In talking about the spaces, I can talk to Neil about the spaces of buildings. I can talk to Robin about imagining, characters and stories between the spaces. And I was thinking how I could extend that to you. And I'm not sure if I could really labour that too much. But what really strikes me about what you do and what you do here is that the Sofitel is kind of like a microcosm of Melbourne in a way. It has to function every day and it has to get through every day. And you are really central to that happening, but people don't recognise it, do they? That is very much the art that you provide. And I love the Grand Budapest Hotel, the movie. And in the movie, there's the line that says, the bellboy must be invisible but always within sight.
Absolutely.
The bellboy, and I don't mean to demote you to a bellboy there, that's not... But there is something about filling the absence in a way that people don't realise. You can run a beautiful, smooth event like this tonight and people won't particularly remember your contribution or the fact that it occurred through you, and that's particularly the art that you're involved in.
Well, I think that's the skill of many people, though. It's not just hospitality, yes, that's responsible for this. But you know, the image of the swan gliding so beautifully along the river and those little legs going like nobody's business underneath. Now, we didn't experience that at all, did we, Mrs. Gold? No, it was from start to finish, darlings. It was perfect. There's been no hiccups, nothing at all. It's just been perfect. But I think, you know, I've seen Joan Collins naked. Big deal. You know, seriously, big deal. And she didn't know I was there. I was just somebody standing there with her. Yep, that's it. It's that sort of comment. And
I didn't think you would kind of take my example or use that as an example to illustrate my point, but it's... Yes, thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, you've got to get a laugh somewhere these days. If we were to talk about spaces that, and both Neil and Robin have, I think the spaces that I would see is if you go over to just over in Flinders Lane there, there's a most beautiful, probably 1930s building with Art Nouveau. It's only about three stories high. There's a laneway that leads from Flinders Lane down to Flinders Street, and it's as wide as those three chairs. And you know, there's cigarette butts and beer bottles and the detritus and effluvia of life. But you look ahead and there's a tree. And it's a beautiful tree. In spring and summer, stunning tree. In autumn, it starts to lose its leaves, and then in winter it's completely bare. But it changes, it's seasonal, and it is it's a snapshot.
Mm.
And it's a snapshot that's quite beautiful. But it's such a simple thing. And if we were to talk about spaces that appeal to me, there's a place called Mingarry and I'm not a church go, that might come as a bit of a surprise to a lot of you, but Mingarry and I don't even know what sort of church that is. Yeah, thank you so much. I don't go down to Swanston Street because there are Protestant churches down there. You go into Mingarry and there's just this, through all the buzz of the city and all the noise and all the fun and all the slightly dangerous edgy side of the city, you just walk in and there's water and there's music and it's just beautiful. So that's my sort of space for those moments where I think, you know, you need to be by yourself, which happens to us, I'm sure, most of us, and you just reflect. And then you come out and you see what is Melbourne and the beauty that is Melbourne.
Yeah. Yep. What I love about Judy's work is the Edinburgh Gardens here.
is that, like you were saying before, Robin, we see Melbourne in new ways. This exhibition shows us Melbourne in new ways. And that particularly strikes me as a different way of seeing Edinburgh Gardens. And I love it. It incorporates, you know, this Indigenous history and the wildlife, which you probably don't see a lot of these days in Edinburgh Gardens, but it's a beautiful piece of work.
I bet you do. I bet you those possums, if you're out at the right time, you'd be seeing them. There's the dogs. And this guy down in the corner here, come and have a look at it later, the man in the white hat with the pipe standing in the corner, very nonchalant. I do want to know his story, and he reminds me of a man I wrote about in Bear Brass, a current day, well, in 1995 he was a current day man who flashed at me in Howie Place in E.W. Cole's old... he was dressed entirely in white denim, and this man reminds me of him. Not so much, he didn't have a hat, and but he's... Well, he's also... There's definitely the outline of a penis in the picture, so that
there
was
is,
also
there
what
is.
Reminded me of him. I'd like to know the story of that man. He stands out to me in that little corner capturing in Edinburgh Gardens.
I remember you referring to him in the book and saying that he might have been a ghost of of a historical
figure.
Of Howie,
I think. Howie, after whom the place is named, who died at sea. He was a very successful real estate, early, realtor in Melbourne, and he went home to visit, home with a capital H, on the strength of, his real estate success, and the ship went down with all hands and feet, presumably, too, and he was one of them. And so I speculated that this spectre in white might have been some connection. Not that I believe in ghosts, and I'm not sure that you do either,
I'm
despite
not sure
having
either,
written
no.
about them so extensively.
I should know by now, but
you
not
should
sure.
know.
Move
yep.
into war of the house and you'll soon find out.
Tell us. Come on, we want to hear. Hey, what's the ghost?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't think it's a member of the Meyer family who were owners at one stage, but there's a distinct chill in the air in my apartment some nights, yes. And again, the curtain moves. Yep.
It's probably because the curtain's open. That's probably responsible for both things.
Oh, thank God for that. What's the feeling I get when I'm in bed and I think somebody's there? That worries me. Yeah, that's definitely imagination.
We might leave it there for the moment, ladies and gentlemen, if I can just interrupt. What I'd like to do is, on that note, actually, we have a number of the artists of this exhibition with us tonight. And what I thought I might do is just quickly throw it open to the artists. If they have any questions of our panellists, anything they've heard tonight, or likewise, panellists, if you have any questions of our artists. I thought that might be a nice opportunity. And then I'll open the discussion up to the wider audience as we go on. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, it's never too early to put the boot into Sydney. Okay? That's so please do that. Take the opportunity. It's a cultural event. It's what we do in Melbourne. But for now, we have Kat, we have Angela, we have Bindi, we have Heather and Judy. We also have Deb and Carmel. Am I missing anyone there? Is there anything from what you've heard tonight or any questions that you might have of the artists yourselves? I have a particular question for Kat, actually. If we can just grab the microphone. It's not hard, Kat, but we've been talking about your focus on the Docklands buildings and we have Eureka Tower there. And it strikes me that Deb's work is very much about the architecture of the body and you know, one of the best examples of design in the world is the human body. Have you ever thought about incorporating your buildings with a human model and printing directly onto a human?
That's too hard. Next question. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm not interested in the figure at all.
Right.
My buildings speak to me as a figurative element. So when you look at cities, particularly, and I've been to quite a few, there is a kind of gender identity with some. I went to Spain and I thought female. I go to New York and say male. So it's about the direction in which the building kind of navigates you. That particular print, just a tiny little story, I am very shy. It was accumulated. So I watched the Docklands, and it's great that you picked up on that. I watched the Docklands kind of begin. So a lot of it is about a place that was demolished and then reconstructed. And I used to take the free tram because it's free. And I used to ride around Melbourne in a circle and get off there and just walk around in a circle. And there was hardly anybody there. And I loved it. I thought it was just priceless. So I spent years at the Docklands loving it. And then as soon as people kind of started to get into it, I left. I left the building. I thought, it's over for me. Docklands are over. But I got quite a bit of inspiration from being there and from being surrounded by it. That's why that when I was asked to do this by Carmel and Diana, I just thought, Docklands, I need to represent that journey, which was very Melbourne for me at the time.
Wonderful. Round of applause. Yes, please. Heather, could I just ask you, people might have seen us wearing the spiders, referring to Lola Montez and the famous spider dance. But here in your artwork, here in the bottom right-hand corner, we have what looks like a spider. Is that the intention there?
Yes.
Very much?
Yes.
It's a wonderful-looking spider.
Yes. I didn't want to make an obvious spider. I just sort of manipulated a spider.
Yes.
To indicate a spider.
I love it.
Good.
And Judy, we've been talking about Edinburgh Gardens.
Mm.
And I know that you spent a lot of time travelling in Northern Territory and looking at ceremonial paintings and very much within the work, your stipulations or your striations and your stipple effects very much alludes to a kind of indigenous, the history there, the indigenous story. Can you tell us a bit about how you use those and incorporate those?
I have to think about